Welcome to another episode of Subscription Radio. I'm your host, Ben Fisher, a.k.a. DJ Fish, a.k.a. Mr. Rodeo. I have with me a special guest, Jack Rubin. Jack's the co-CEO and founder of Purdine Fig, which is basically the best-smelling cleaning products in the world. And they also happen to be eco-friendly and sustainable. And I'm sure you can talk share a little bit about how you've approached that part. But part of what's been interesting with Jack and how we originally connected was on Twitter. And I was reading through several of his like Twitter threads around just a bunch of the experiments they've been running around subscriptions. I think back in June, Jack, you'd had like this massive thread talking about how you basically substantially reduced churn. I think you were at like, I don't know if it was like 70% churn, and then you basically flipped it to like 80% retention just by changing your strategy around frequency and price. So I think there's a bunch of topics that I know that we can go over. Is there anything you want to add into that introduction that I have not already said?
No, not at all. Thanks for having me, Ben, on the podcast. It's great to be here.
Yeah, let's jump into, so like, in terms of like the basis of the business, like you just quickly walk us through like how many different products do you have? How is it structured as a subscription versus like we'll call it repeat a la carte business? And how has your strategy changed over time as you've scaled? And can you give us a sense of sort of like what your numbers magnitude wise are looking like?
So we actually started as just pay as you go for the cleaners, and we only launched subscription in January of this year. So for most of our existence, we've been a pay-as-you-go brand. And we acquired about 30,000 customers as a pay-as-you-go brand. And then this year, since we flipped to subscription, we've acquired about 20,000 subscribers and about 10,000 pay-as-you-go customers. So we're about, at this point, 66% subscription. And actually in the last 6 to 8 weeks, we're looking more like 80% subscription. So we've really, you know, gone from mainly pay as you go all the way over to mainly subscription since we started.
And are a lot of those converted customers? So they were previously a la carte, pay as you go, and then they shifted over to subscribers, or are these new customers who just started subscribing?
This is just new customer numbers. Some pay as you go customers switch to subscription. Although we have found that once you're on pay-as-you-go, that is just the kind of model. Whatever you come in on is what you're used to. You do convert, you know, 10, 15, 20%, depending on the cohort, over to subscription from pay-as-you-go. But it's not as, we haven't found it as effective for getting subscriber numbers.
Yeah, so could you talk through a little bit just, so what was that big shift in your subscription strategy? Because I think that, you know, those numbers, great. There was like a big change that you made in June around how you were even approaching your subscription strategy. You sort of walk us through quickly through that.
Yeah, I mean, subscription, most businesses approach subscription in the way we did when we started, which is you get your PDP, you stick a subscription widget on it, and you give 20 or 25% off for subscribing. And, you know, a percentage of customers, call it 20% of customers, will choose subscription. And that's how most businesses look at subscription. And they try and get people on as high a frequency as possible with as much kind of yearly LTV as possible. And so that's exactly what we started with. We started with a monthly subscription, and we just changed the widget on our site, and we got some early subscribers. But what that doesn't take into account of is, well, firstly, you're not actually building a customer acquisition funnel around trying to convince someone to subscribe. And that's a really important part. What are the benefits of subscription? It's not just here's money off, it's why is subscription actually better for the product you're buying, and building that into the customer journey. So it doesn't work as effectively on that regard. But also the way you're chasing LTV, it's a pay-as-you-go mindset, and you're applying that pay-as-you-go mindset to subscription. So it's like, how can I get as much money as fast as possible from customers? But the thing about subscription is the value is in the long term, not the short term. You'd much rather have high retention and much lower monthly revenue per customer than, you know, a bunch of revenue in your first 3 months and then really high churn. And you can model this out. I've modeled it out in every way you can imagine, and it always comes out the same. keeping your subscribers will make you way more money. So that should be your number one aim, is keeping subscribers, and everything else can work itself out.
I'd say that's interesting, because I'd actually like to dig into that a bit. I have several friends who run D2C brands where they've actually completely eliminated the one-time purchases, and they force people into subscriptions. And I've gone back and forth with them around my opinions, and you know, they say they've run their numbers. And ultimately, for some brands, they're just looking at LTV, and what they're saying is, because oftentimes you're looking at cost of acquisition too, right? So someone paying you, optimizing over the lifetime, if they're going to pay you, let's say $1,000 over the course of 3 years versus paying you $500 over the next 4 months. And I'm making up these numbers, but basically for them, they're like, well, if you look at the math, like you should be doing subscription all day long. Now, that's just looking at it from that lens, which is frankly not the lens that I that I look at it from. But it is, I have gotten this argument, I've heard this argument a lot, which is actually the opposite of what you're saying. And so I'm curious to see, like, what did you see when you modeled it out?
Just to understand the argument. So they're saying you'd rather have £500 in 4 months than £1,000 in 2 years. Yeah, I completely understand that. And that's partly down to the each independent business, because acquiring revenue from a customer over a time period can, if it's too long a time period, that revenue is worth less because you've got an overhead base in the business. And so your ROIC, your return on invested capital, essentially drops over time because of your overhead base. But that's if you've got a big overhead base and you're spending loads of money basically to run your business and keep your subscribers. Too much money, I would argue. So if you keep, so it's dependent on the business. For us, with a relatively low overhead base and with the number of customers we're acquiring, the cost of maintaining the business per year divided by the number of customers we have is very low. So we've got 20,000 customers on a subscription, right? So the cost per customer might be £5, might be £10 for the year. That's £20 of revenue, which isn't a massive headache for us in terms of the LTV those customers are generating. But other businesses have much higher cost per customer. If your AOV is higher, especially, what you might find is you might find that you're only acquiring 3,000 customers, and so your overheads are divided by 3,000 customers, and that it becomes a bigger deal depending on what your CAC is. So there's a lot of things to consider in answering that question kind of categorically. But for us, when we've done the modeling, it's very clear that lifetime value, maximizing for retention and the length of time a customer stays with you is really important. Can I just make one more point as well, which is the value of a customer goes up the longer they're with you, in the sense that for two reasons. One, the longer a customer is with you, the less likely they are to churn in the future, by definition. So most churn curves go doom, and then they go like that. They keep dropping down. You've kind of lost my hand, but then they just flatten out. And so what you'll find is after about a year, your churn curve is almost completely flat. And those customers, their value is held. And then when you build in adding other products onto those customers' subscriptions, so let's say we launch a hand wash, let's say we launch a bathroom cleaner, loo bombs, which were, you know, all the things we're looking at, those are all going to add incremental value to that subscriber who are basically sold on staying with us. So keeping customers, as many customers as you can, for that flattened curve, for me, is an obvious thing to do. It's just mathematically obvious. And I think will lead to very high lifetime value figures.
It makes sense. And as a consumer, I think, you know, I think the first time you and I spoke on the phone, a lot of what we nerded out on was about, we'll call it the consumer centric, like basically designing a consumer centric subscription experience. And in my mind, it's not even about subscriptions. Consumers don't give a shit about subscriptions. What they care about is convenience, and what they care about is having the product when they need it. Not too much, not too little. And so like it's really like this idea, and I'd say the cult of subscription, and I say this running a subscription company, but like I don't think of us as selling a subscription software. It's subscription is a piece of the puzzle, and it's really about like driving repeat purchases. in whatever way maximizes or enhances the lifetime value as well as the experience to the consumer. Because subscriptions aren't always the most convenient, and also it varies. Like sometimes you're traveling a lot, in which point like subscription isn't necessarily convenient right now. Like during COVID, I would imagine during the lockdowns, subscription was much more convenient because people weren't going anywhere. Now that folks are traveling again, the last thing you want to be worrying about is, shit, this thing got mailed to me while I'm like going to be in Cabo or wherever. And so I am curious about how that's going to work as things are opening up.
One of the things about subscription is that it's not right for every brand. And a lot of brands say, oh, I tried subscription, it doesn't work. I can't acquire customers, it doesn't work. And that's probably correct. It doesn't work for that brand because they haven't got the right building blocks for subscription. If you're not a consumable product that is used on a reasonably regular cadence, where subscription doesn't actually add value to the customer experience in a meaningful way, it probably won't be something customers opt for, or they'll only opt for it if you incentivize them so heavily or trick them into doing it. That's just the reality of customers buying things they need. They will not buy a subscription they don't need. For us, we're a cleaning product that you use every single month, and so it makes a lot of sense, because who wants to bother going to the supermarket to get a cleaner?
Other interesting piece though is, let's say you haven't experienced, I mean, obviously you guys have positioned yourself as the best smelling cleaning product in the world. But as a consumer, if I haven't used your product before, why would I subscribe the very first time I buy, right? Typically it's for the discount. I'm curious when you look at I'm curious because we see tons of people subscribing from day one. I'm curious, in your perspective, is it just for the discount? Is there an element or desirability of the idea of the convenience of the subscription? Because they're not yet a customer until they renew, because they haven't experienced the benefit.
Well, I think that's all down to the funnel. It's down to two things, right? It's down to the funnel you're building and the way you're pushing customers into subscription. And it's also down to how you're marketing your product and how effective that marketing is. So we'll start with the funnel concept. So if you push people to a PDP with choice, then people will often choose pay as you go. If you build a funnel with like a single option page that pushes into a straight to checkout subscription link with one option, you don't have to choose the frequency, you don't have to choose anything like that, and it's a smooth experience for the customer to understand what they're buying, and it's easy, then they will often go along with it if they want the product. In the customer's head, it is just, this is how this product is bought. It's not like, I want to choose subscription or not. It's like, this product is bought as a subscription. And if you look at Harry's, or you look at, you know, those successful subscription brands, it was never an option. It was never, oh, I want Harry's, but I'm just going to buy the head and, you know, one razor. It was, I'm going through this funnel. I pick the frequency, I pick how often I shave, and it delivers to me every month. And that is basically the thing that most people don't grasp and don't execute on. And then the second thing is, how are you actually guaranteeing customers an experience they're going to love? And that's, you know, social proof is a massive part of that, and building in that confidence from customers that you're a reputable company, that your product's really good, everyone loves it. And for instance, we've got a money back guarantee for customers on subscription. And they have to believe that that's going to be action. So when they look at your Trustpilot or they look at your reviews, it's clear that the company or the brand is interacting with its customers properly. It's replying to Trustpilot reviews. It's available. So that if they don't like the product, they're pretty sure the company will refund the order, and that will all go through smoothly. So I think all those things are important.
No, I think it's interesting. Because one of the brands that we work with, they actually did a similar transition where they went from, initially you could choose what your interval was, and then they shifted just to monthly. So you can do pay as you go, or you can just do monthly. And it was the very similar logic, which was they're guiding you through how the product is intended to be experienced. And once you've bought, you can actually change your frequency. Like once you've subscribed, you can still go in and change your frequency. But from a customer acquisition perspective, they eliminated all the decision-making. And just guided the person into the purchase. Yeah, as you were speaking, it reminded me of that book, Don't Make Me Think, Where basically, eliminating all the sort of micro decisions that someone needs to make. It's interesting when thinking about, are there situations where not having the ability to choose the frequency would make someone not purchase? It's interesting. And I imagine part of it's product specific to an extent, I would imagine.
Definitely. I think frequency, we played with frequency quite a lot, and we found lower frequency leads to cheaper acquisition and better retention. And that was something we've seen in every test we've run.
Yeah, as I recall, you're basically doing quarterly now, right? Like every 4 months?
Every 3 months.
And with that, did you experiment with like bulk? Like, because the other aspect of a lot of this too is shipping costs too, right? So my assumption is, you know, in terms of like the unit economics, if you're going to, in some ways, you'd rather send someone 4 months worth of cleaning product as opposed to monthly, because have you guys experimented with like the volume that you're sending the person? Like, oh, you're getting 4 months worth of product versus this is, you know, because if you send them 1 month worth of product, but you only have them renew every 4 months, then that introduces another challenge. And I know that you'd said, at least on Twitter, you'd rather someone run out than have too much. that's a great switching opportunity for them, right? Because then you potentially lose them if they go to like the local CVS. Although I know what you're saying is not if they love the product.
Not if they love the product. So we've always shipped in packs of three because, as you said, we can't ship one. It's just not economical for us because of the shipping cost. So what we were testing is shipping three refills, which could last someone. We say three refills is 3 months worth, but the reality is, depending on the size of your home and the amount you clean, it could be much less. You could get through it in 4 weeks, theoretically, if you've got aggressive cleaners. So we tried shipping every month originally and giving people essentially too much product. And yeah, it just doesn't work. It just, you know, you can't give people too much product. You've got to give people the right amount of product. And I think a bit less than they actually need. They won't mind waiting a few days in between shipments. Or they can, if they have the nous to change their frequency, they can do that. Although I believe there's a big education problem with getting customers to understand they can do that. And that's something we're working on.
I mean, my thought there too would be is, if I were you, what I would also do is knowing that they're much more likely to run out as opposed to the reverse, sending people a preemptive email after 3 months saying, hey, just checking to see if you're going to need it sooner, right? Like, do you need to refill sooner? Reply and we'll expedite your order so that you don't run out, right? Like things like that, where it really is framed around like consumer experience as opposed to you just being self-promoting.
So the problem I have with that, I mean, I get that, but I'm super careful about communication with subscribers. It's like one of the great things about subscription is you don't have a company emailing you all the time, like hampering you to buy more product and being annoying. And because all pay-as-you-go, I mean, I did it as a pay-as-you-go company as well. You're like sending three emails a week, you're pushing new products, you've got offers, sales, whatever it is. And the great thing about subscription is it's not needed. Like, they can just go off into the sunset and get their refill every 3 months and never have to think about it again. And I don't like trying to kind of, get them having to think or click around and move their thing and then it gets messed up. And that's, especially with our audience who are older women, I'm just super mindful of that and just not drawing too much, you know, attention to all these different elements. My philosophy is very much kind of let customers work it out for themselves. But as I said, there is also an education issue.
I mean, your logic makes sense. I think it's for the same reason that I'd be inclined to remind them, which is at a convenience being like, hey, I know you're not thinking about this, but we're thinking about you. And if you like out of convenience, like we're not trying to sell you something else that you don't need. It's more in the context of if you're running low, just reply. Right. Because that would be another example of how do you eliminate friction? And you can do that through passwordless logins or whatnot. But you can also do it like Gary Vee and like Wine Text, or they do it through email too, right? Where you just reply by, and you know, that can be done through CX agents.
Sure. But then like if I'm moving a subscription though, so our biggest reason for cancellation is not they don't like the product. It's I want to choose when to get it. That's I've decided I want to choose when to get it. And as soon as you're giving a customer that initial email saying, oh, you might want it sooner, i.e. your frequency is not quite right, and they're thinking, oh yeah, it's not, that's then an opportunity for them to think, oh, I just want to buy it when I want it. You know, this is not working. It's too stressful. I'm just going to buy it when I want it. And they come off the subscription. And so I'm maybe overly tetchy, but I'm aware of that dynamic.
Interesting you say that, because I mean, as you know, like that's like our big thing is this idea of being able to shift between, like with Rodeo, it's shifting between a automatically renewing subscription and then an on-demand subscription, where the person's still in a subscription, but they can choose. They can either get smart reminders saying, hey, are you ready for more? Or it can automatically renew. And it's really treated as a win back for that exact reason. But no, because all the points you're saying, I mean, they make complete sense. I think it's more a design challenge around the experience.
The win back is great. And I think win back is a massive area that the software I'm using can improve on. And I think a parachute option for subscription dropping off is a massive thing that we want to implement. So we have a yearly subscription as well. So you get 18 bottles delivered at once, $49.99. And that's really popular as a product on our site. Especially it's the most popular with pay-as-you-go customers who are wanting to go onto a subscription. They often pick the annual pack. They know they love the product. They just want a big chunk of it and they don't have to think about it for a while. But I would love to start parachuting up people who are unsubscribing from the refill packs, the packs for three, to the 18 concentrate pack. But at the moment, I can't do it.
Have you experimented with like inflow upgrades? So if someone buys a monthly, upgrading them to an annual?
I've got a post-purchase, but it doesn't cancel their original monthly. So it's a bit of a, so at the moment, it's just a pay-as-you-go upsell, because I don't want them to have two subscriptions. Well, they could have two, but it's probably having a year supply and then a quarterly subscription is probably a bit much.
I say, what we've experimented with is you cancel the original one, you swap them out.
How do you do that? Which is there a software you use to do that?
It's our platform. Yeah, I'm not trying to pitch us. I'm just saying, yeah, we do that. Yeah, we enable fluid upgrades where you swap out the monthly and you replace it with the subscription. Like for us, it's. Yeah, sorry. I wasn't trying to pitch us.
And does that work? Does it work?
Yeah, it works really well.
That would be pretty big for us.
But I think, you know, part of what I want to dig into is just like the different strategies you're employing. So you are using post-purchase upsells for both like your one-time customers as well as your subscribers. And when you're doing that, are you selling complementary products or are you selling more of the same product? Like how has upsells fit into your overall strategy as a business? Like how much incremental revenue is that adding? Like, is it critical? Like, does it make the difference of like profitable acquisition or not? Or
doesn't make the difference between profitable acquisition for us. It helps a bit. So we've added £40,000 of revenue in the last 3 months from upsell, post-purchase upsells. And we're doing 10,000 more a month. So call it, you know, a pound plus an order, which for us, given our order value is £20, average order value is £20, that makes a difference. It's a 5% increase. We found that's helpful. But for us, the biggest lever is not upselling. Although that's great, it's bringing down NCPA, because we know that we've got a relatively good grasp on LTV at this point, and we understand every pound you reduce the NCPA, your LTV to CAC ratio improves dramatically, basically. So as a business, and we, by the way, when we look at LTV to CAC, we include overheads. And this is something I really would love to dive into if you want to, but.
Yeah, no, let's hear it. And also, can you define that first acronym? I'm sure I've heard it, but I'm not familiar with it. The N one.
Oh, NCPA is just, it's like CPA, but for new customers. So it's a lot of people just say CPA for new customers, but because CPA actually cost per action on our dashboard. So NCPA is new cost per action. It's just my terminology. So I'd love to dive into CAC to LTV because...
Yeah, let's dig it. Let's do it, man.
So a lot of people look at LTV and CAC and they... Well, firstly, they look at it on a gross basis. So they'll go, your LTV is like £100 and they won't properly look at contribution margin of that LTV. So they're like, oh, we've got a 3-to-1 CAC to LTV. And it's like, no, you don't. You've got a 3-to-1 revenue to CAC, which is not the same as CAC to LTV. So the first thing is strip out all of your costs of delivering the goods, costs of product, and get your proper contribution margin and compare that to your CAC. Then it's like, okay, how do you define what the CAC is? And most people just take their ad spend and they say, you know, we spent £10,000 on ads. We got 1,000 customers. It's £10 per customer. So our CAC is £10 and our LTV is 50. Your gross margin is 50%. So you £25 LTV. So you're looking at 2.5-to-1 CAC to LTV. That's what the second phase of doing that calculation would be. But what I think most brands have to do is they need to include all costs related to marketing in their CAC. So if you've got creative costs, if you've got, you know, freelancers doing consultancy on, you know, design work or scripting videos, or you've got UGC creators or whatever it might be, that should, or you've got agencies running media buying, and you've got ad commission fees and all that stuff, that needs to be built into your CAC. So it's not just £10,000 of ad spend divided by 1,000 customers. It's probably more like, you know, £10,000 of ads, well, let's say a bigger number, £50,000 of ad spend plus £15,000 of other cost. So that makes a big difference. And then the second part to this, which I think is even more important, is building in all your overheads. So the cost, what we were talking about earlier, what's your cost of keeping that customer for the time that you're measuring their lifetime value? So for that, you want to divide the number of customers you're acquiring by the total overheads of your business over the time those customers are delivering the LTV. And what that'll normally do is add an extra, you know, big chunk of cost into your CAC or your cost to LTV. And that will tell you if you're truly making money from customer acquisition. That ratio, getting all your costs divided by all your costs for delivering LTV divided by the LTV itself, will give you whether those customers are truly profitable for you. And I think that's where a lot of subscription brands are not profitable, and why they're not profitable, because they're not looking at that. So that's my spiel.
That's really interesting. I'm curious. So I hate to just transition away from that, but one of the things I wanted to ask you was just talking about subscription programs in general and like this idea of, we'll call it like perks of being a subscriber, right? Like I think one of the challenges in CPG is it's really a matter of how you think about subscription benefits, right? And I would say this blending of membership and subscription where, you know, I'll say like one of the brands we work with, Jot, they have products that you can only get as a subscriber. So they've gone down this direction and we've worked with them around how do you structure a subscription program that has benefits outside of just getting more product versus, you know, membership you pay like with paid membership, okay, you get like 2-day free shipping. Whereas our perspective is more that if you're a high or a loyal customer, you should probably get free shipping for free, right? That would be a benefit of being an active subscriber or being an active customer. And I'm curious about just the way that you've thought about that and if you've incorporated anything beyond just replenishment into like the benefits around your subscription program and how you're thinking about that or exploring.
Yeah, I think it's a massive part of successful subscription. So what we say internally is we want to make it, you'd have to be stupid to unsubscribe is kind of the mindset. So how do we make this so cheap, so easy, and with so many benefits that you'd have to be insane to press that unsubscribe button? That's the mindset. We're nowhere near there yet. And at the moment we're mainly a replenishment thing, but we're building things like community things, access to Facebook groups, access to our founders, Purdy and Charlotte, who have a lot of product knowledge and a lot of kind of tips and tricks around looking after your home, free gifts with purchase, early access to product releases. All these kind of things are are things we are looking to build into the subscription experience.
And I'm curious, like, what do you, so of, I mean, including those things you just mentioned, like, what do you see as the biggest driver for your, of growth for your business in the future? Like over the next like 6 months, the next quarter?
Well, for us right now, we're just focused on acquiring as many subscribers as possible for as low a cost as possible. So driving down our CPA and driving up our customer acquisition volume and making sure customers are getting their continuity orders on time, in good shape, with the things they want, and just operationally delivering a good service is other things we're looking at.
And predominantly, and I know we mentioned this at the beginning of the show, was you were experimenting with TikTok as a customer acquisition channel. How's that worked out? And like, what are you seeing on the customer acquisition side of like the different channels?
So we scaled TikTok up to like 30 grand a month in spend. Bearing in mind, Facebook's over six figures in spend. So we got TikTok to kind of 30% of our spend. But you know, the CPAs looked okay on platform, and our NCPA blended kind of held relatively steady. But then we turned TikTok off one day, and our NCPA dropped massively when we turned it off. So that told us that TikTok was basically more expensive than Facebook. Even if you're looking at the whole funnel in terms of what it's adding to top of the funnel, it's basically increasing the cost per customer. So now TikTok's been scaled right back down, and we're totally focused on Facebook still. My personal view is, until we're hitting the 10 million mark, well, I'm going to assess it every month, every year, but I think you can scale to 10 million on Facebook. So being super focused and good at winning on that platform feels like the right move right now.
And are you sending people to like your typical product detail page, or are you sending them to landing pages?
All landing pages. Yeah, 99% landing pages.
Yeah. And are you pushing to subscription on those landing pages? Are you doing part of what we were talking about earlier of eliminating the option to buy a la carte? Or do you still present both options?
No, we just present the subscription option.
And I'm curious, like with TikTok, so you were doing paid ads. Did you try experimenting with like influencers?
Yeah, we do. We do a lot of influencer stuff on TikTok. So we see two or 300 influencers a month on TikTok, and just give them product and get lots of content and create that community on TikTok. And we do a lot of work on organic TikTok. So organic TikTok is like at 90,000 followers now, which had like 100 in March. So we've gone from 100 to 90,000 followers in like 4 months. So you can check us out, Purdy and Fig on TikTok. We do lots of cool cleaning tips and hacks to help you clean your home, and clean talk is a big thing on there. So,
as opposed to, I guess, dirty talk.
Fortunately not.
So I'm curious, are there any brands that you subscribe to? Like, what are some of your favorite subscriptions or even like brand experiences for yourself?
Yeah, so Wild, which is a UK deodorant brand, I subscribe to, and I think they're great. And I know their founder and CEO there, Freddie, quite well. I took a lot of inspiration in terms of our model and thinking around some of his thoughts. So definitely Wild, check them out. I think that's the only thing I subscribe to. What about you?
So I subscribe to all of our customers, actually not because they're customers, but because I actually really like the products. So everything from Jot for coffee, and then Biome for cleaning wipes. Although I'm going to give you guys a try to see the scent.
We don't ship to the States yet, I'm afraid. I'll send you a box anyway.
I would love to try it. No, because that would be, I'm sure my wife and I would both love to try it out. Yeah, I was on a subscription meal plan for a while, for probably like 9 months. I'd say one thing about me is I'm very much a creature of habit. And so I'm like a huge fan of subscriptions, where basically they would track they would deliver food wherever I was in the world, based off of like my macros, because I had like my weight goal, I would do my weigh-ins, and then based off of that, they would use nutritional data that's available on, because like chains, at least in the United States, food chains have to disclose the number of calories in different meals, and so they're able to sort of estimate based off of the calorie of the calories of the meal, as well as like what are the different ingredients in that meal. And they focus predominantly on foods that are like fairly like, I would say like Whole Foods. And so, yeah, I was able to lose like 30 pounds just being on this meal plan leading up to when I got married over the course of probably like 6 months. But it also had the problem of subscription where like there's times I want to have meals with friends and I couldn't subscribe. I couldn't cancel my meal. I had to give them 48 hours of notice. And I was like, I live in New York City. I don't have 48 hours of notice of anything. I'm lucky if I have an entire day, like 24 hours of the notice. And so I found that I actually was wasting a lot of time and money, a lot of money and food, which was a bummer because the product itself was great. It wasn't flexible. And as a consumer, I felt like I was wasting a lot of money and food. It is interesting thinking about like D2C subscriptions versus Amazon, because we do have some Amazon subscriptions too for like the household. It's like our dog wears diapers. So we have like doggy diapers on subscription. Like there's certain products I think that I would be more inclined to subscribe to like just on Amazon, because it's like, all right, we want all our household stuff at the same time. Are you guys on Amazon? Are you intentionally avoiding that channel? Is that something you are going to expand into if you haven't already?
We're on Amazon, yeah. It's a matter of contention what we're doing with it. But the fundamental view is it's a place where people want to buy, and so we should be there. I think the debate is whether we should be more expensive there, because the margins aren't, you know, the margins after FBA fees and costs of running Amazon aren't as good. So yeah, that's a debate, ongoing debate right now.
And I guess the thing is too, is you don't want it cheaper than your D2C site or D2C brand.
Definitely not cheaper. But the question is, should it be more expensive?
Right. And my assumption is too, because they'd be buying it through Amazon out of convenience. I can't speak to the price sensitivity of your target. My guess is, yeah, that'd be an interesting experiment. One question I like to ask is, do you have a big ask for everyone listening? Like, is there something that could change your business or change your life that if it were to happen that you want to like put out there?
My only ask is if you're interested, follow me on Twitter, @JackRubin1.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes, your Twitter handle. Anywhere else that people should go to like check out the brand or check out you?
Yeah, go on our website, PurdyandVig.com. We've just launched a new site, so any feedback on that would be super, super helpful. Put Purdy and Fig on Instagram, Purdy and Fig on TikTok. Consume our content, get involved. And I assume a lot of your listeners are American, so I'll try and put a tweet out when we launch in America. So
yeah, and I'll send an announcement once you've done that too, so we can let people know.
Thanks.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, man. It was a great conversation.
Cheers.